All right, it's time for Fast Track. We do this every day at this time. I got questions for Ramona. She's got them for me. We always start with a ceremonial coin flip. And Ramona, since you're going to the Dodger game tonight, we'll do this. Heads, by the end of the season, Trevor Bauer will be the best pitcher statistically on the Dodgers staff. Tails, it'll be one of the other guys. Call it in the air.
Oh, heads. Bauer power. Bauer outage, whatever his Twitter handle is. Right? Bauer outage?
Tails it is. Donald.
Yeah.
John wins. Oh, okay. Ramona, I will go first.
Okay.
No advantage comes
with
that.
All right.
Okay. It has been reported by several sources that an investment group led by Alex Rodriguez is very close to buying the Minnesota Timberwolves from Glenn Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Wolves' biggest assets is the number one pick in last summer's NBA draft, Anthony Edwards. Edwards is great now that LaMelo Ball is out for the season. Edwards will probably win Rookie of the Year. But listen to his reaction when he was asked what he thinks about A-Rod buying the Wolves. Here it is.
Do you have any thoughts about him? Are you an A-Rod fan at all growing up or anything like that? What you think about what he might bring to the team?
A fan? What do you mean? Like, who is he?
The baseball player? Alex Rodriguez?
Yeah, no, I don't know what it is.
What?
Okay.
I know he's going to be the owner, but I don't know about baseball.
All right. So Anthony Edwards, who was 9 when A-Rod retired, has no idea who he is. Let's say A-Rod buys the team. Is it something or nothing that Edwards doesn't know who A-Rod is?
I think that's something, but I think it's actually a good thing. It's not a diss on A-Rod, okay? It's more
did
about...
Did you see how A-Rod reacted?
What did he say? But I didn't catch that part.
He sent a out on Instagram, on A-Rod's Instagram page.
Uh-huh.
He said, "Hey, Anthony, I'm A-Rod. How are you?" And Edwards came back at him and said, "I'm great, my dude. What's
my
up?"
My dude. Look, Anthony Edwards is a character. I don't know if you followed his post-game interviews this year. He's so funny. I should have had you cue this sound up, so I might just try to play it for you here. He is a crack-up, and he's also this kind of guy. He's kind of feisty. And so,
Jorge, see if you can find this. Probably,
do you have the Irish
right
interview
away.
With the Irish reporter?
Well, do you, or the other one we played earlier in the year, Marnie Gellner, who's the sideline reporter for the Wolves, asked him, "What other things are you good at?" And he basically said, "I'm good at everything."
Everything, yeah.
And she said, "Wait a minute." He goes, "How about golf?" He goes, "I'd be great at it." How about baseball? Or he goes, I'd be awesome. I in football, I would ball out. She just kept coming up with things. Bowling, I'd be the best bowler on the team. Blah, blah, blah.
He was really good at football. He was actually a football player before he was basketball. But he said to me when I did an interview with him recently, and he said, "You know, I really don't read a lot of stuff that's out there. I don't follow comments on social media." And I think that reaction to the A-Rod question was, I believe him, because I think he actually doesn't really read anything.
Oh, he's 100% being genuine. And if you watch that clip again, he's looking into the lens of the camera, playing with his hair.
Yep.
He wants his hair to look good.
Yeah.
And he's answering questions. So I thought that was
See. Do you have the one about the Irish reporter? This is great, John. You ready? Okay, go.
If you get a win tonight, that would breed confidence going into those next 4 games against teams in the similar spots beside you in the table.
Where are you from, Jim?
Ireland.
I like your accent. It's tough. I want to learn how to talk like that. But ask your question again. I was too much listening to your accent.
Yeah, no problem, Ant.
By the way, that's how all my cousins in Ireland talk.
That's so
every
good.
One of them.
It's so. I mean, he's legit like that. He is not. That is not an act. That is just gut level reaction. Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I love that. All right, it's to you.
Okay. All right, here we go. Hey, in the second half of the Atlantic League, you know that league that always experiments with all the new real rule changes in baseball, John? Starting August 3rd, the pitching rubber is going to be moved back 1 foot to 61 feet 6 inches, giving hitters more time to react to pitches, according to a release by Major League Baseball. They're essentially doing this because they think players are striking out too much. The strikeout rates have increased by 15 consecutive years, and Major League Baseball just wants to see if moving the pitching mound back by a foot makes a difference. John, what are we doing here?
Ramona, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Oh no, if you like this?
If Mason were here, he is a baseball traditionalist. Mason doesn't even want night games. All right.
Oh wow. Okay, I'm not that far.
But
okay.
I think baseball is trying to expand their fan base.
Yeah.
Baseball is boring. Like Lindsay is a giant baseball fan. She's going to watch baseball no matter what the rules are. Same with Mason. The people baseball has to get are the people like me and Jorge who like baseball but aren't addicted to it. Like, we're not hardcore fans. What's going to get us to tune in? It's stuff like this, more action, fewer strikeouts. For example,
Wait a minute. There's going to be more strikeouts if you move the pitching mound back.
No, it's not. Why not? I've got longer to look at the ball. I can see the ball more.
I highly doubt that that's going to make a difference.
Why do you think they're doing it?
They want to see if that's enough room. So essentially what that would do is it would give the batter longer to look at it. It would probably decrease velocity a little bit. I don't know if a foot's enough to decrease velocity significantly, but I think it would actually be harder to throw strikes because the break on the ball, usually when it breaks, it breaks from being a ball to being a strike. Well, now if it's a foot longer, it's going to break out of the strike zone by the time it lands, by the time it gets to the pitcher.
I'm for anything that makes the game more interesting, and I think this would. But like, here's a great example. I couldn't believe it. Like, I really like Phil. Do you ever work at the Daily News when Phil Rosenthal was there?
Uh huh.
Okay, so I really like Phil. Got a great relationship with him. I really like Tom Hofarth, who you worked with at the Daily News.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Tom and Phil were having a Twitter conversation the other day, talking about how they don't like the rule in extra innings,
mm-hmm.
where you put a runner on second base to start the 10th inning.
Uh huh.
I love Phil and I love Tom. They're crazy. That's a great rule. I love that rule. Hmm. It puts excitement into the 10th inning immediately. I want to see. Whenever I see extra innings now, I go, oh, I'm going to watch this. I want to see if they can keep that guy from scoring. I think to me, I've already invested 3 hours in a baseball game. And their point was, if you love baseball, you don't need something to shorten it or to be I understand their point. But Ramon, I love that rule. Do you like that rule?
I don't think I don't hate it as much as I thought I was going to. I hate the rule.
By the way, Oral Hershiser has been won over on that rule.
Yeah,
he loves it now.
Because to me, I think strikeouts are a product of guys trying to hit too many home runs.
Okay? I do too.
I don't think they're necessarily because the pitchers are too close. But this will probably just make guys hit more home runs. And I also think like when we see. I'm a traditionalist. I like station to station baseball, but those days are probably gone. The analytics guys have won.
Right.
Everybody over is saying it's like the 3-point shot
in
basketball.
You another thing I would do. I would outlaw the shift.
Oh, I think you should be able to do whatever you want defensively.
Yeah, no
if
way.
If you're a hitter, you should adjust to that and you should spray the ball the other side.
Right up the middle, I want it to be a hit. I don't want like three guys.
But if they're playing nobody
there.
On the left side of the infield, if you're a left-handed batter and there's nobody standing at third base and you don't take advantage of that by spraying the ball down the third base line, that's on you, man. That's a guaranteed double if you do
it.
Right,
we should bring this up later.
Oh, I
really
get fired up
topic.
On this one.
Okay.
Okay.
It's to me. All right, Ramona, the Houston Chronicle has parted ways with NFL reporter Aaron Wilson. Wilson went on WEEI radio in Boston 3 weeks ago to talk about the Deshaun Watson sexual assault and harassment allegations. During his appearance, he denounced the civil suits filed as a money grab.
Wow.
Before comparing the situation to negotiating with terrorists. At one point during the conversation, when talking about the Watson case, he said, quote, in his case, you know, it's kind of you don't negotiate with terrorists. People are demanding money. They're asking for money. It kept escalating. It kept going up and up. You're talking about more and more funds. I'm not going to say how much it got to, but my understanding is, you know, there was an admission that, you know, something, you know, that this what it was. You're just doing this for a money grab. End quote. Wilson kept writing for the Chronicle after that appearance. His last article published on Monday, just before he was let go. You've been a sports writer your whole career.
Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised the Chronicle fired him for this?
I'm actually not. You asked me about this weeks ago. You remember this? We had this conversation on air. How should we process this?
Right.
And I said, you know, as hard as it is, because I remember initially the thought was, oh, well, maybe this is coming out now because he wants to be traded. And then,
yeah, we didn't know.
Right. And I said, John, the thing we have to do, as hard as it is wait for more information. We have to wait. We have to wait for everything to come out, and then you see the full board, and then people make their decisions and about what this really is. When you're a reporter covering a news story as sensitive as this, you have to stay impartial. And I, what it sounded like when I heard those quotes that you read me, it sounded like he'd probably been talking either to somebody on Deshaun's side, right? Like that's probably what they say behind the scenes about what happened, either Deshaun or Deshaun's side or whatever right. It is. It doesn't sound like you talked to anybody on the other side, right? And we do that. We have this all the time. I mean, there's a case that's been filed against Aaron Donald. Okay, we have to go look into this. We have to get both sides. We have to see what the merits of this are, and then we take our time with it. And it's hard because all of our job is literally to react to things, literally to have an opinion and a hot take. But I think on legal matters like this, your job is you're not the columnist. Okay, columnists can do that.
They're paid to give opinions,
right?
Okay, let me ask you a question, though. I, as you know, I am very, very sensitive to cancel culture.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to. The first question I ask when someone's about to be fired is, would a suspension serve the same purpose?
Yeah, that's true.
Couldn't they have just suspended this guy? He had been there for years.
Probably.
I think firing someone in a pandemic and then hanging this on him, even though it's his own fault,
yeah,
is going to make it very difficult for him to get another job. Really? We had to fire the guy? Do you think a suspension would have worked?
Probably would have worked the same way. And especially if did he issue any kind of an apology?
He did. Admitted he was wrong.
Yeah. So I think you're right. A suspension probably would have worked the same way. He obviously really messed up here, and right. Those are bad quotes. And
part of it depends on where you work. When we got into the Paul Pierce thing, when Paul got fired last week, if he was working at Turner, he probably doesn't get fired. He might not even get suspended. They have a different set of standards than if you work for Disney. So part of it is who you work for. But the question I would always ask is, do you have to fire this person? Is this person, do you have to cut ties? Is this behavior, for whatever you're addressing, so egregious that you feel you've got to cut bait? And they did in this case, which I thought was extreme. All right, we got time for one more.
All right. Okay, well, I'm going to do my bachelor question. Do you want a fun fitness question or do you want the bachelor question?
Bachelor.
All right. Okay. Former Bachelor star Colton Underwood did an interview with Robin Roberts this morning on Good Morning America, and he has come out as gay. I came to terms with that earlier this year, and I have been processing it. I'm the happiest and healthiest I have ever been in my life. John, how is Bachelor Nation reacting to this? And put that into context with his season and who he was on the show.
Okay, so let me start with this. And you and I, Ramona, were on the ground floor when Mason was debating whether or not he was going to come out. It was an incredibly hard decision for him. You and I both encouraged him multiple times.
I taped a whole podcast with him where he rehearsed
it. It was kind of a soft reveal.
Yeah.
If people found that podcast, he basically came out and admitted a long time before he admitted it. But here's the thing. I'm happy for Colton. I think that I whenever I get stories like this, I always say, you be you. If your happiness is determined by you letting the world know that you're gay, more power to you. And I think if you're part of Bachelor Nation, to address your question, and I am, I watch all those stupid shows, and you are coming down on him today, it's going to make it even harder for the next person to come out. This is what they're worried about. They're worried about if they come out that they're going to get attacked. They're going to get yelled. Is it a perfect situation? Should he have put those girls through that? Probably not. And he admits that now. But I just think it's piling on to criticize the guy. If he is happier living this particular way, what difference does it make to me as a fan of the show? I kind of applaud him for kind of coming to grips with who he is and putting it out there.
Me too. I thought it was great how he was talking about, he grew up very religious and he also was in football, right? He was a football player.
Right. I've met him. He played in the Laker golf tournament
Years ago. Okay. And he said that that really made him have a harder time coming out. But do you know when he comes out now, it makes it so much easier for the next person who also has to deal with that. Like, I remember talking to Mace all the time, saying, hey, man, it's like 2020. It wasn't 2020. It was 2015 or 2016.
Yeah, whatever,
like,
you did it.
Whatever it was. I go, it's different, man. When I was in high school, one of my best friends was gay. He had a hard time coming out. It took him many years to do so. I go, it's just different now. Like, we grew up when it was a big deal when Ellen said she was gay on air. Remember that? That was a really big deal. Now it's like, no big deal. You just come out and say it. Like, I think you've built this up into a big thing. And I think the world has changed enough now. And this really was a big reveal today. I thought that was a seismic kind of reveal with Robin today.
Right. And I hope he's happy. I hope he's feeling better about it. And I would encourage people that feel like they want to comment on this not to kill the guy.
Yeah.
All right. You know, he didn't do it on purpose. This wasn't a perpetuated fraud on the Bachelor franchise. It's just kind of, he discovered himself while he was doing this. And to me, I hope he's happier. All right. That's it for Fast Track. Coming up, Ramona, there was a huge game on the schedule. The game is on ESPN today at 4:00. Nets at the Sixers. They're both 37-17. It's for first place in the East. The shine is completely off this game. And I'll tell you why coming up. Ramona Informace, I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN.
I like it. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Your accent.
Ramona Shelburne's information this week and today, 4:00 on ESPN, right when we get off the air on TV. What looked like, Ramona, a huge NBA game. Knicks. One of them, they wish. Ben, I got Ben Lyons.
I know you do.
Sixers, Nets in Philadelphia. They're both 37-17. They're both competing for first place in the Eastern Conference. And the Nets have completely kneecapped this game. They just announced they're sitting Kevin Durant. They're already sitting James Harden. No Blake Griffin. No LaMarcus Aldridge. Are we to the point now, Ramona? There's been a lot of injuries, legitimate injuries, and the Lakers, of course, are sitting both LeBron and AD. That the old traditional regular season kind of temperature checks are over? Are teams now basically holding back on purpose?
I think so, especially this year, John. And it's really sad because, like, that's what I was thinking about the other night when I was watching Steph Curry go for 53. Break Wilt Chamberlain's record with the Warriors. Like, Steph Curry takes the regular season games seriously. Like, he's out there and he's giving the fans a show every night. The Warriors are on national TV all the time. And I always feel like if Steph's out there, I'll watch. If Steph's not out there, I'm not going to watch. I mean, it's like, this shouldn't be a showcase game. But when he's out there, I'll watch. And I don't think that players have that same sense of responsibility that to the viewers, the fans, as they used to. And some of it has been enabled by organizations who realize, well, we just need to have our guys ready for the playoffs.
Right.
But it's a big problem to me in basketball because you have a league where if you cheapen the regular season, and I'm guilty of this too, John, like, I cover the league day in and day out, and I save a lot of my good stuff for the playoffs. I do. I have stories that, like, I could run right now, but I don't want to waste it right now when the attention span of the general sports public is not quite focused on basketball yet. I want to wait till they really have the attention of everybody.
I I'm probably still going to watch it because I want to see how they defend Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
But here's my question about Brooklyn. Brooklyn is an elite, maybe all-time elite offensive team. I don't know if there's ever been three offensive stars in their prime all on one team. I mean, this is probably better than Clay, Steph, Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe better than Worthy, Magic, Kareem, strictly in terms of offensive firepower.
Oh, that's a big statement.
All right, but think about it. Offensive fire, you know, Magic was the world's greatest assist point guard, best passer I've ever seen. But Kyrie's a better scorer than Magic was. James Worthy's my guy. but Durant's a better scorer than Worthy. And Harden is comparable as a scorer to Kareem. You know, they both average about 30 points a game. So offensively, but here's the difference, Ramona. They're not even close to a great defensive team. Mm-mm. They're like normally, I mean, how many times have you and I had it beat into our heads? Defense wins championships. Their defense stinks. Their defense is terrible. Are we just ignoring that? I mean, so that's why, you know, Mason's been the one guy that has kind of married himself to Philly. One thing about the Sixers, their stars play both ways.
Well, and we were talking about Ben Simmons as Defensive Player of the Year. Joel Embiid has a really good argument there, too.
Yeah, he went. By the way, he's campaigning for that.
Yeah, he wants both.
Yeah.
Embiid is like, oh, yeah, I should win both.
So, in other words, if you're one of these people that pivots all the time to defense wins championships, and I kind of do, and you're like, my big argument for years and years and years is, and you got to put Michael Cooper in the Hall of Fame. It looks like they're finally going to do it. He's a finalist for it. That he was the best defensive player of his era on five different finals teams. And you talk to those any of those 80s Lakers, including Michael, and they'll tell you there's no way they win all those championships without Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper would guard the other team's best player every single time. He would guard Larry Bird. He'd guard Michael Jordan. I mean, he would guard Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
And the Lakers would come out victorious in some of those series. So it's defense is equally important to offense. I fully admit Brooklyn, and I've been the one saying they're going to the finals. But should they be the favorites if they were a 22nd ranked defensive team in the league? Mm.
So I would favor them in every series except the Lakers. Like I would,
I think I would too. Like, but are we ignoring defense?
We are, and I think this is, we're going to get back to the MVP debate. Like Michael and I are sort of I think right now, if I had to vote, I'd vote for Embiid. I know he hasn't played that many games, but he plays both sides of the ball, and he's great. And to me, them going from sixth in the East to first in the East is a big thing. But it's the defense that, like, he's so much better defensively than Jokic, right? And that is a strength of the Sixers. That is the Lakers. What's their? It was 106 with AD and LeBron defensive net rating a game. 105 without him.
Yeah, they've gotten better. They just defend all the time.
They're one of the best. I think they're the best defensive team in the league right now. I think that's right. Sometimes they trade places with a couple teams. There's the Knicks are up there, as well. They from night to night. So that's how they won last year. Though they won because AD and LeBron were great, but also because they were great defensively.
And, you know, one thing you can see tonight, even though all these guys are out, is that Ben Simmons guards all five positions and Joel Embiid is a great rim protector.
Yeah.
So I think that the Sixers are going to blow the Nets out tonight because the Nets have basically said, we don't care about this game, and they're benching everybody. But if these guys get in a playoff series, it's going to be fascinating. Fascinating, because I don't know if a team that doesn't play defense can breeze right to the finals. But if there ever was one, it would be this team.
It would. Now, I want to say this. Do you remember the first Boston Celtics with a team that went to the finals, 2008, with Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen that year?
Right.
They had a great regular season. Do you know every single one of their playoff series went seven games, except for the finals, which they had 1-6?
Yeah, including Atlanta in the first round.
Yeah. That it takes a while for those, when those three players get together, even if they played all year together. Remember, it was Doc Rivers with Mbutu.
Yeah, I mean, actually, they arrived ahead of schedule. Normally, you don't do it in the first year. They did.
So we're so high on Brooklyn. We all think they can learn to play together. They look great. But I just want to pump the brakes just a little and say it doesn't usually happen the first year those three guys get together, those three superstars get together.
It'll be very interesting. I mean, I don't know what tonight's going to tell us with all these guys sitting, but the more I think about it, the more trouble I think Brooklyn's in if they don't at least attempt to defend.
Yeah, I want to see if DeAndre Jordan plays tonight, because to me, just physically, he's the best chance they have at matching up with Embiid. I'm not saying he can stop him, but Nick Claxton is probably their best defensive five. Right? Would you even call him a five? I guess he is in this situation. But he's how many? I was 40-50 pounds. He's giving up to Embiid. I don't see Aldridge or Blake Griffin stopping him.
I mean, well, especially not tonight. Neither one of those guys are playing.
You know, I mean, in any kind of series. But, like, tonight, I think DeAndre is going to play. And he's had a lot of DMPs that he's sort of been out of the rotation for them. But that might be where he comes in to play again.
All right, Ramona, coming up next, think about this for a second. Is there anything you would wait 14 hours for? 14 hours.
Are you asking 41-year-old Momo or college Momo?
Any time. We'll ask everybody. We'll ask Lindsay, Jorge. We'll open the phones. 877-710-ESPN. You'll be shocked what one person was willing to wait 14 hours for. Mm. We'll have that for you next. Radio Tinder coming up before the end of the hour. Mason in Ireland, 710-ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Mason in Ireland, Ramona Shelburne's in for Mace. And here's the question, and you can ring through at 877-710-ESPN. Is there anything in the world you would be willing to wait 14 hours to do? And Ramona, the reason I bring it up is that if you follow Manchester United, like I do, they're my one Premier League team that I actually pay attention to. They had a game last week, and they had a streaker, which is pretty popular in Europe, guys running naked. It was popular in the 70s in America. This guy's 37. His name is Olmo Garcia. The local media has nicknamed him the Naked Man of Grenada.
Oh, boy.
Because Grenada was hosting Manchester United for a game, and this guy in the middle of the game ran naked across the field. And nobody could figure out, well, how did he get in? Because there's no fans. You know, there's no fans in the stadium. So he couldn't, like, come in a trench coat and hand a ticket and walk right through the gate. And so officials figured out that this game was played at 9 o'clock at night. At 6 o'clock in the morning, this dude snuck in and hid under a canvas to evade security for 14 hours.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Jorge, yo, Lindsay, you guys are both Marvel movie fans. Sometimes you guys line up outside. Is there anything you would wait 14 hours for?
Well, first off, I'm not a Marvel fan, as I've said many times. And people,
wait a minute,
don't...
I thought you watched all those movies
I've,
that Mason
I've said
watches.
Many times that I don't watch any
of
those movies.
Star Wars is your
thing.
I
don't like them. I mean, yeah. I love Star Wars, but I've never had to, like, physically wait outside.
So you've seen all the Star Wars movies. How long would you wait on opening night for a Star Wars movie?
I wouldn't. I mean, that's something where you just buy the tickets online.
Yeah, but, seriously.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think the two things are comparable, but... I did twice, actually, for both an Xbox and a PlayStation. I forget which ones. Wait overnight, probably like 16, 18 hours, camped outside of a Target.
Wow.
To buy one. But
what?
I did it so I could turn around and sell it and make a bunch of money.
Okay.
All right, so you're doing a hustle. Jorge, what's the longest you've ever waited in line to do anything?
I haven't like waited that long for anything, but if I would wait for something, it would be World Cup final tickets. If I can get my hands on World Cup final tickets.
That's pretty good.
That's like, you know, one of those special events, man. If you get a hold of that.
Momo,
so,
how about you?
John, when I was in college, we were really good at basketball. Stanford was really good. We had Brevin Knight, Mark Madsen, the Collins twins, and we went to the Final Four my freshman year.
Great team.
Casey Jacobson. Yep. He's a little later, but he was when we started off, it was Arthur Lee. I don't know if you remember any of these names.
Sure.
Anyway, we had so my freshman year, we went to the Final Four. It was like the greatest run we've had ever, right? And everybody the next year got so excited that season tickets were impossible to get, and even student tickets. So what we did is, in my sophomore dorm, we decided we were going to pool up, and we were all going to camp out and take shifts waiting for the season tickets. And like, if you wanted to be, to, and if we all, like, let's say there was, I think there was probably 50 of us who wanted to get in on this. So we each had to do like 6 hour shifts. And then, okay, it's like when your person who was, we had a schedule and a sign up thing to keep our spot in line. And we did it. It was actually really fun because we got enough tickets. We got tickets to go to enough of the games. Like, you couldn't go to all of them because you had to share, but we had enough for the dorm to where we could rotate. So that was really cool. But I would not do that now. I'm too old. And I don't sleep outside anymore.
Okay, so I've only slept outside and camped out for tickets one time in my life.
All right.
My college roommate and I, okay, so imagine living
All of these are college stories, right? We're all too old and bougie now.
But imagine living in Los Angeles in the 80s, okay? Now,
Showtime Lakers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm in college, and the Lakers and Celtics meet in 84. And it goes 7 games. And we lose to the South, the most gut-wrenching loss as a Laker fan that I've ever endured. We won our games by an average, our 3 games by an average of 16 points a game. They won their 4 games by an average of 5. We're so much better than them, but they won. So they have the so 85. They Lakers come back and they finally break the Celtics curse. And in both years, I tried to get tickets to the finals. Struck out both times. They said, and so they meet again in the rubber match in 87. Celtics won it in 86.
Yep.
So Celtics in 84, Lakers in 85, Celtics in 86. Here comes 1987, the year we traded for Michael. And we're all thinking, me and all my friends are thinking, this is our year. This is the year we finally win the rubber match. We're going to put those Celtics in. And so my roommate and I said, we've tried everything to get tickets. Let's go to the forum. We'll sleep out overnight. And you just, all you're doing, this is before the internet. There was no, you know, you couldn't do any, like Lindsay said, I buy tickets online. Mm-hmm. None of that. The technology didn't exist. So what you're hoping for is a low lottery number. You camp out and then they come out at some point and they give you lottery numbers that allows you to buy 2 tickets. All right. And so what you need is a super low lottery number. And if you get a lottery number that's over like 15,000, even over 10,000, you're probably out of luck because everybody's buying 2 tickets before you and the forum only holds 17,000 people. So the girl comes through the line and she gives out the lottery numbers and I look at mine and it's like 19,212. I spent the whole night there.
Yeah.
Struck out. Look at my roommate and I go, what's your number? And kind of with a smile on his face, he goes, 431.
Oh.
And we bought tickets for 2 different games in the finals. And we're able
so
to do it.
Cool.
That's the only time I've ever done it. And I don't know now in the era of, like Lindsay was saying, where you can go online and refresh and try and buy tickets that way. If anybody does that anymore, do people still camp out waiting for stuff?
I think they do. I think they. I see them out at the movie premieres outside of here at LA Live. I think people do, especially like if it's a chance. Well, I mean, we have people call into the station. They sit online forever. Right?
Yeah. Well, there's a guy, Carlos, on line 3 right now. Carlos, how long's the longest you've ever waited for anything?
Hey, what's up, John? Hi, Momo.
Hey.
So for my wedding venue, I waited about 32 hours.
Wow.
Wait a minute. So they had a drawing just to use the venue?
No, so the way it works is it's an outdoor venue, and it's in Santa Fe Springs. It's called Heritage Park.
Okay.
So it's only during, they only rent that venue out during the summer since it's outdoor. So there's only about 12 Saturdays in the summertime.
Right.
So those 12 spots fill up pretty quick. So in order for us to get a specific date, we had to wait outside that venue about 32 hours. We camped out about 32 hours prior to the first Saturday.
Was
of the
anyone
month.
In Carlos? Was anyone in front of you, or were you the first one?
There was one person in front of me. And they were there for about. They had got there like 6 hours before we did, so they were up there for 42 hours.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the whole thing was that, you know, wedding venues nowadays are super expensive,
yeah.
And this is a. It's like a community park.
I know what you're talking about.
It's for venues for weddings, so they totally it was a reasonable price. So we absolutely got the venue, had a great time, and my wife was happy. Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah,
there you
man.
Go. All right, good call, Carlos. Here's Jason in Downey. He says he's waited for more than 14 hours. What'd you do, Jason? Oh, he just hung up. Okay.
He didn't wait three minutes for us.
Yeah, I don't believe him.
Yeah.
Like, Ramona, what you'll learn is I won't wait in line. Lisa, like, yells at me because I won't wait in line for anything. If we go to a restaurant and there's a wait, yeah, and the hostess will say, I mean, this is pre-COVID, but hostess will say, the wait's 20 minutes. I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah, let's get a new restaurant.
Lisa will go, what are you talking about? Let's go have a drink. We'll be fine. I'm like, nope, I'm out. There's 10 other restaurants within 2 minutes of here. So I'll never wait. What changed everything, and you'll learn this, have you taken Daniel to Disneyland yet?
Oh, not yet, no.
All right, so when the Cars ride came out.
Oh, God.
Jack Ireland's favorite movie was Cars.
Yeah.
You know, with Lightning McQueen and Mater and all, you know. And so there's this new Cars ride at Disneyland. Now, keep in mind, I got in an hour early. An hour before the park opened, because I'm a Disney employee, because I worked at ESPN. We ran from what, like, the park normally opens at 8. We got there at 7. We ran to the Cars ride. We get in line. I said, how long's the wait from right here? She said, 3.5 hours.
Wow.
Getting in early. And I waited because it was
really?
His favorite thing. And I'm glad we did. I mean, yeah. I just taught him patience. It was his favorite thing. But that's 3.5. This guy waited for 14 hours.
So we have this thing in our society now, John, that if you're willing to spend a little more, you can get the fast pass,
yep,
the fast track. You don't have to wait to board, right? You know, like if you want to cut the line, there's all these things. If you have enough money, you can usually pay to cut the line. And I think it's kind of ruined it for everything. Like, it's sort of this idea that, you know, for tickets, like, if you have enough money, you can cut the line. You could just spend a lot of money on it. You could just go, okay, well, whatever it is on StubHub, I'll get it. And not think about it.
Let's go to Brian online. Hey, Brian, how long's the longest you've ever waited for anything?
This was 18 hours, and it was overnight in the dark.
Wow.
Sitting on a sidewalk back
for
in
what?
The old Ticketmaster. These were for Prince tickets.
Oh.
Oh, I might do that. That might
listen,
be.
Listen, this was the Love Sexy tour, and it was in the round. And I ended up, I was second in line, and I ended up getting a ticket that was right in front of his guitar pedals for the entire night.
Wow.
So looking back, you're glad you did it.
Absolute.
18 hours, that's a haul.
Yeah.
That's a long haul. All right,
and
thanks,
it's before
Brian,
you had cell
call.
Phones where you could just play on your phone the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah,
you had to, like, bring a book or something.
That's just crazy.
Oh, you bring a, right. What, bring your Walkman? would you make a mixtape?
I don't know, man. Oh, crazy. Man. All right, coming up next, Lindsay's got Radio Tinder. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Momo in Ireland today. Ramona Shelburne in for Mace. Lindsay's got stuff for Radio Tinder. Linz, what do you got?
All right, well, Trevor Bauer has been absolutely dominant in his first three starts,
yep,
with the Dodgers, as we know. But he's been put under a microscope ever since a recent report from The Athletic's Ken Rosenthal about the use of foreign substances on baseballs. Mm. Rosenthal claims that MLB collected multiple balls thrown by Bauer in his start against the A's on April 7th that were suspected of having foreign substances on them. So after last night's game, Bauer was asked about the report and if he had heard from Major League Baseball about the balls collected yet. Here was his response.
No, because they're like, yeah, gossip bloggers writing stuff and having no clue about the actual rule, or actually knowing the rule but intentionally writing something without going investigating. I don't know. I don't know what the hell that report was about. Basically, so I can explain to everybody what the actual rule is, MLB is just collecting baseballs to do a study. Like, they're not doing anything with them. No one's under investigation, or no one's, like, just these gossip bloggers just out here writing stuff to try to throw water on my name or whatever. I don't know. It's personal vendettas, I guess.
All right, so Ken Rosenthal is one of the most well-respected MLB reporters. And, you know, I worked with him when I was at Fox, and he's one of the most diligent, credible writers that there is. Clearly, somebody from the league actually was the one who leaked the information to him. Do you think it's fair for Trevor Bauer to direct his aggravation about the whole thing at Rosenthal? Swipe left or swipe right?
Well, I don't know. He didn't mention Rosenthal by name, Ramona,
right,
which is...
But he was the one who reported it. Mm-hmm. That was where the original report surfaced from.
Right. But once it got aggregated, it went all over the place. And so I'm okay with what Trevor Bauer said. Buster Olney was incredibly pro-Bauer when we asked him about this the other day. He thought this was a witch hunt. And I like Ken Rosenthal. Lindsay, I'm with you. I think he's a great reporter. But I don't think it's right that Trevor Bauer is the only pitcher that we've had this quote-unquote investigation about. It doesn't make sense to me. So I think he was okay with what he said. Momo, what do you think?
So what I would say is, as a reporter, when you report, when you put something like this out, when you do a story like this, you know you're going to get killed. Like it's like you're walking into a buzzsaw. You know that they're going to attack the messenger. Lindsay, I did that to you today, right? There was something we were going to have on, and I was like, hey, that's that. I'm not going to get into what it was. but essentially, like when you put a story like that out, you know. And I've had these conversations in, when I've done these stories where I go, you know, I have to decide somehow whether or not like I'm willing to take the heat. Because I know I'm going to get shot down. I know there, and there's, and I probably will not be able to prove that I'm right. Right? You can't prove it because your sources are probably anonymous. You don't have the actual baseballs yourself. But there's no way Rosenthal puts that out without impeccable sourcing. He didn't just get somebody whispering to him. He had three or four people. Okay. He's a really good reporter. And he did that knowing full well that he was going to get attacked for it.
All right. Let me say this, though, as the person that's kind of supporting Trevor Bauer here. I know another baseball writer, another really good national baseball writer considered, you know, one of the best in the business. I'm not going to say his name because I didn't tell him I was going to tell this story. But I asked him about Bauer once and he said the term this guy used was he's unnecessarily combative. And I thought that was an interesting choice of words. He goes, he thinks the media is out to get him. And what's weird is, I said this to Lindsay before the show today, I think Trevor Bauer is great when he talks. You know, like that bite you just played right there, Lindsay, that's what, as reporters and talk show hosts, we want a guy that has strong opinions. And, you know, if you watch the HBO Real Sports segment on Bauer, he's, you know, he's out there. He's got all these crazy training methods and, you know, he's got all this... these opinions. He's kind of like the Bryson DeChambeau of baseball. And Lindsay, let me ask you, because you covered him in Cleveland. Do you like Bauer? I mean, he's obviously a great player. I'm not asking you what your opinion of him is as a player. His stats speak for themselves. As a guy, do you like him or would you like rather not have to deal with him?
No, I like him. I think he's great. And I think that in the past, like in Cleveland, there was a lot of headbutting with people in the media, but I think in most cases, from what I remember, it was rightfully justified. But I think here my issue is I think his anger is misplaced towards Ken Rosenthal. Yeah. I think his anger needs to be placed at the league because obviously they're the ones who leaked the information. And just like Buster Olney said yesterday, somebody in the league said that and they specifically ruled out and targeted Trevor Bauer. And I think that it's unfair for him to target Ken Rosenthal, who's just doing his job and reporting information. And Ken, if you read the original story, Ken was very clear about, well, we don't know if there's other people the balls have been taken out. And he did say that there was an investigation that was going on. So Trevor Bauer doesn't know what the source told Ken Rosenthal. And I trust him enough as a reporter to know that he, like Ramona said, he would never put something like that out there if it wasn't heavily sourced. So I think that Trevor Bauer's issue should be with the league and the commissioner and not with the reporter who just passed the information along.
All right, what's your next one?
All right, Charles Barkley is probably best known for his witty, always entertaining commentary on TNT's Inside the NBA show. But imagine if he left Inside the NBA to be an NFL analyst. It sounds crazy, but Barkley was allegedly offered an opportunity to join Monday Night Football. He recently appeared on the Jim Brockmeyer podcast and talked about how a network once approached him about trying to make the switch. And Chuck said, I like football, but I ain't going to be one of these jackasses that get on TV and act like he know about football. So let's imagine that Charles Barkley did leave Inside the NBA. Who would be the best option to replace him?
Wow.
Great question. I'm going to give you guys a surprise answer that you might come back at me with.
All right. I got an answer too.
I think Candace Parker's been great.
Yeah.
I think that she's totally held her own when she does that
and
show
then some
with Dwayne Wade and Shaq. She does not back down. She obviously knows the game. She's great looking. So for, you know, TV medium, she's perfect. I just think that she, it would be a risk, but what do you think, Ramona?
Look,
you,
Candace,
you know her, right?
Yeah, I know. I'll tell you the Candace story. This is my favorite one. Okay. About 5-6 years ago, when she was first starting to transition into television, John, we were talking about something else. I can't remember what it was, but she said, "Hey, do you think I could come by and shadow you someday?" I go, "What do you mean shadow me?" She goes, "Well, I want to get into TV and I'm trying to get good at it, so I want to study people who do it, and I just want to see how you prepare and how you do shows." And I go, "Yes, you can do that. I mean, like, yeah, whatever you want.
Interesting.
I mean, sure." So I just let everybody, I let Carrie Champion know. I let The Jump know. I said, "Hey, she's just going to come by and see how you guys produce shows, because she's, you know, thinking about transitioning." And they go, "Yeah, okay." So she sat with, like, the producers.
Good for her.
Literally sat with the producers as they're coming up with segments. And so you wonder why she's good at TV. It's because she worked at it. Like, she didn't just show up and was great. Like, she worked at it. She had a humility about it. Like, she didn't think she walked in and knew everything. She wanted to know how segments are designed and how talking points are constructed.
That would be Ramona.
Your first answer. I got one though.
The other one I would be is, I think Richard Jefferson's a star in the making.
Oh, right? Yeah, he'll be a star here. We got him. ESPN's got Jeff. Okay.
You know, he's already got a deal. He does the Nets games.
Yeah.
He does some stuff with Spectrum.
Yeah.
He does this stuff with podcasts.
Look.
He's going to go. Let's put it this way. There's a reason TNT's the number one ranked show and maybe the greatest pregame show of all time, and that's nothing against ESPN. Matter of fact, I think what the stuff he does with Rachel on The Jump is spectacular. I would hate to see him go anywhere else, but if TNT wants them, they'll break the bank.
Yeah. So what I would say is there's one answer to this question, and his name is Draymond Green. Like, he is so good. When he sits in with those guys, he's so good. And I know he's still playing. He's probably going to play for 3 or 4 more years. But if there was ever a moment where Barkley decides I'm done, I think Draymond slides right into that chair.
By the way, did you read the one rumor that's out there that the team that would love to get their hands on Draymond is Portland? They think that they put Draymond in that lineup with their guards.
Interesting.
With CJ McCollum and Dame. And, you know, they have Nurkic at center. Yeah. And they think they got Melo for, you know, another year. I mean, not that the Warriors would give up on Draymond, but boy, that is interesting. Like, apparently they really like him, and that they would love to try him up there. That could be a second kind of career rebuild. Lindsay, what do you think? Would you pick one of the people we've mentioned or somebody else?
I would. I think Draymond would be great, but I will say, just pie in the sky. I know he works for us at ESPN, but I think Kendrick Perkins would be fantastic. He'd be great.
Why would you steal our guys, man? We gotta be on our team.
Charles Barkley isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So I'm just thinking it's a hypothetical.
You guys are like Draymond out there recruiting KD when he's on Oklahoma. Hey, back off, man.
But Ramona, look, I mean, there's a reason why those guys at TNT have the rope to say anything. At ESPN, you've got to be careful. There's a different set of standards there.
I think that Perk and RJ say a lot.
Do you think Paul Pierce would have got fired at Turner?
Well, I'm not even going to talk to this one. Okay,
right.
But it wasn't what he said.
I don't. I think they would have suspended him. I think they would have, said, "Hey, you can't behave that way." But we'll see.
Other factors at play too. Yeah,
okay, Lindsay, you got time for one more?
Yeah.
You done?
Yeah, last one here. Last weekend, the University of Central Florida unveiled their new social media themed uniforms for football on social media. Instead of their last names, the football jerseys feature players' Twitter handles on the back nameplate. Head coach Gus Malzahn was asked, "Why Twitter handles on the back of the jerseys?" And he said, "This is the new age of personal branding." Mm. And some people believe that this idea is going to be commonplace in college football in the future. Do you like the idea of social media handles on college players' uniforms?
Hate it. Hate it.
Yeah.
I think that it's so Mason. You know, isn't it? Can't you see Mason doing that?
Totally.
Like, if Mason was a contestant on Jeopardy, he'd make a sweatshirt with all of his, social media handles on it. Yeah. It's I'm more important than the team and winning. And, Ramona, I hate it. How about you?
So I've been trying to, I'm caught in the middle, John, because on the one hand, I'm trying to care less about social media. I think it's toxic. It ruins my sleep.
I agree with you.
It sits in the pit of my stomach all the time.
And I will retire. The minute I'm done doing these shows,
yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah. I like posting baby pictures on Instagram, and that's about it. You know, like I'm not done with Twitter. Okay. I can't be done with Twitter. Like,
right.
It's my
we
job
to do our job.
Yeah. Post my stories and post stuff. I mean, but it's so toxic. And so I can only imagine what it would be like to be in the social media era when you're like young and still trying to find yourself. And so I really cringe thinking of high school and college players branding themselves on social media already. Oh, but it also is a necessary evil for this world. Like, it's how people know you now. It's how people find you.
So you'd be okay with the Twitter handles on the jerseys?
I guess, yeah.
Well, Lindsay, you're the youngest person on the show. I'm guessing you're for this, right?
I think it's a cool idea, and maybe if it was like, I don't think if it were every game, I think it could be something like they do the alternate jerseys, you know, like the players do when they have like, you know, Ohio State does like the all black uniforms or Oregon does the neon green uniforms. I think it's a good idea for an alternate jersey because, like Ramona said, it's all about personal branding. And these guys still, at this point, are not getting paid. So I think it's a good idea to find a way to get them out there, get their names out there, and try and, you know, do something that's going to help get these guys noticed a little bit more. I don't know.
All right, that's Radio Tinder. Coming up next, are you buying the Clippers? You know, more and more people are jumping on the Clipper bandwagon saying they're the team to beat now. They're getting it all together. Really? Have you watched this movie before?
I know.
We'll get into that. And I got a cool Frank Vogel story that I will tell you in regards to something that happened yesterday. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.